Good evening, everyone. This is Michael's Saturday Surprise for Saturday, December 30th, 2017. I'm your host, Matt Cox. And as I've done, well, here's another Towers Hour. This one is definitely dedicated to Rick, for the first half hour at least, and the second half hour is dedicated to the sailor in us all. Harry Towers did a lot of things in his radio career, and remember what he said in the video when we first got to know him. He said if it sounded good, if it looked good, and if he thought it could make any kind of money whatsoever, he'd produce it. And so he dabbled in a little bit of everything on radio. This is a program that is dedicated to stories of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Now, what's so great about this program is, and I was listening to this, and I kind of thought to myself, this was probably sold to whatever Canada's commercial network was. So, you know, probably not CBC, because remember, Towers is out there trying to make a buck, so there's plenty of spaces for commercials. And it's not even, you can tell as you listen to this, recorded in Canada. It was definitely recorded on the other side of the pond. They may have gotten some Canadian actors to play the role, and they may have done some of the recording in Canada and then spliced it back in London. Either way, I really hope you enjoy this. I certainly did. We go back to 1954. No date on this. It's the Queen's Men and the Great Train Robbery, or the Anderson Gang. Even though the last name of the show is Mercer. Enjoy.
I solemnly swear that I will faithfully, diligently, and impartially execute and perform the duties required of me as a member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. The Queen's Men, for the first time, authentic stories of the world-famous Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Tales of men who, for almost 100 years, have helped to keep peace in Canada. The Queen's Men. The Queen's Men. True stories of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Names have been changed for family protection. And now transcribe The Queen's Men.
Uncle Wally? Hey, Uncle Wally, what you doing?
Well, now, Davy, what does it look like I'm doing?
Cleaning your gun, eh, Uncle Wally? What you getting it all polished up for?
Oh, just so it'll look nice.
You gonna shoot somebody with it?
Eh? Oh, maybe a fox or two one of these days out on the edge of the town. Those foxes that have been getting at Hank Jenkins' chicken, you know?
Gee, that doesn't sound very exciting. How many bad guys did you kill with that gun when you were a Mountie, huh, Uncle Wally?
Now, wait a minute, Davy. You ought to know by now, a Mountie's got lots to do besides shooting off his gun.
Well, remember what you promised last night when Pop got talking about the gold rush?
The gold rush? Oh, let's see now. I didn't promise I'd go prospecting with you, did I?
No, gee whiz. You said sometime soon you'd tell me a story about how the Mounties caught that big train robber. Didn't you say you caught him?
Nope, not that time. Oh, but that was a long time ago. I can't remember just who it was caught him. I remember the big fuss there was at the time, but I'm not sure I can just remember all the details accurately.
Oh, well, tell me anyway, Uncle Wally. Tell me the story.
Well, there were a lot of robberies in those gold rush days, you know. Lots of train holdups when that gold was getting toted around the country. Now, there's something peculiar just seemed to happen to people when it came to gold. They wanted that gold. Some of them got it honestly, and some of them didn't.
Well, how about...
Hey, oh, just look at that gun gleam in the sunlight, eh? Will you hate to see a beauty?
Well, tell me about the guy that didn't want it honest.
Oh, dear. You know, it sure beats me the way you kids rather hear about the dishonest ones, you know?
Yeah, but if it wasn't for them, the Mounties wouldn't stay in business, would they?
Well, I guess you're right about that, Davy. Well, let's see now. How did that case go? That one where the gang held up the CPR train twice in a row.
Yeah.
What was that fella's name now? We'd say it was Mercer. Now, this Mercer, he was smart, you know. He got away with it twice, with the Mounties on his tail the second time, too. Now, wait, it happened the first time. I probably can't remember it to tell well enough.
Oh, sure you can, Uncle Wally. Sure you can.
You really want to hear about it?
You bet I do. Come on, Uncle Wally. Tell me how you caught him.
Well, I didn't catch him. I was new on the force then, and I only heard about it afterwards. It started with the express messenger on the CPR train one rainy night. Dark and rainy and no moon showing. And that train was highballing it out of Woods River with a safe full of gold dust in the baggage car. The express messenger... I remember him now. His name was Hugh. He was sitting there in the baggage car making up his report and chatting with the mail clerk and... Both of them thinking they were safe as a pair of babies, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not sure what they were thinking, but you can just kind of picture them, can't you? Rattling along in that baggage car with the light from the lantern showing up the streaks of rain in the window.
Engineer's really stepping it up tonight. Feels like we're doing 60.
This bumpy stretch of track really throws you around. That's going to be a messy-looking report, isn't it? The way it's hopping around on the table.
Well, I'm just about finished. Got the money and the gold dust counted and back in the safe, nice and secure.
Well, I'd rather count mail any day. Man, look at that rain come down.
Hey, what's happening?
Feels like we're stopping. Now, why would Jeff be breaking the train halfway between here and nowhere?
Well, maybe there's a cow on the track.
On a night like this, don't be crazy. All sensible cows are at home in bed.
Maybe he's stopping so I can get this report finished easier. Well, Jeff knows what he's doing, I guess.
I hope so. I've been on this run for 2 years, though. I never remember stopping here, rain or no rain. Say, how do you count gold dust, anyway?
It's all been weighed and packaged. Count up the packages.
Oh, I see. Darn funny thing, stopping here.
What are you going to do?
Just open the door and have a look out.
Can't see anything tonight.
That's a queer one.
What is?
A lantern. I can just see it through the rain. Someone's coming down the road bed alongside the train carrying... Who's there?
Say, you sound jittery. You don't suppose...
Well, what do you know? It's only Jeff.
The engineer?
Yeah, I can see him now. He's carrying the lantern, and he's got some guys with him. What's up, Jeff? You run out of coal? Jeff! Speak up, boy!
All right, get your hands up or I'll blow your heads off. That means you too.
Now, listen here.
Don't argue with him, Hugh. Do as he says.
That's right. Do as I say, and I won't harm a hair of your head. Harry, Bud, take the engineer into the next car and keep him covered. Which of you two is the express messenger?
I am.
And you stay right here. The other one, you come on outside. Come on, nothing's going to happen to you. My buddies are just going to keep you company for a few minutes. That's a good fellow. Okay, boys, get them both out here. No rough stuff unless they start it. Me? I'm coming in out of the rain. Oh, some night. All right, keep him in the air, mister.
What are you after?
I'll give you 3 guesses. Where's the gold dust? In the safe over there?
How'd you get on the train?
I'm asking the questions. But since you're interested, we boarded the tender at Shafter when you slowed down. So that's the safe, huh? Well, I'll let you get it open.
Well, I don't know the combination.
Come on, stop playing games. Open it up, let's all stay friendly.
I guess you mean business.
That's right.
Okay. You don't mind if I lower my hands, then?
Lower them straight at the safe and nowhere else. I'd feel real bad if I had to shoot you. All I want is the gold, then you guys can all get on your way again.
Operator, get me the Mounties. Headquarters at Dunville, Saskatchewan. Hurry, please.
Yes, sir.
Say, Jeff, order me a cup of coffee at the counter, will you? No, don't bother bringing it over here. I won't be long.
RCM Police Headquarters, Sergeant Turnhoe speaking.
Hello, Sergeant. My name's Hugh McNaught. I'm a CPR Express messenger.
Yes?
There's just been a robbery.
Robbery? Where?
On the CPR train just outside of Marsh Neck, maybe 50 miles. I was guarding a shipment of gold dust heading for Vancouver, and the gang, there were three of them it looked like, boarded the train at Shafter and held up the engineer and forced...
Can you give me a description of them, McNaught?
Just the one who robbed me. I couldn't see the others. They were outside. It was raining. This fellow was tall, about 6'1 or 2, broad-faced, dark.
How was he dressed?
Something dark. I can't remember very well. Dark overcoat, navy blue or black.
You say he forced you to open the safe and then clean it out?
Yes. Then he and the rest of the gang made us all take our places on the train. I ordered the engineer to start her up. We stopped here at Marsh Neck. First place we could get to a phone.
We'll get to work on it. We want to speak to you personally as soon as you can get here.
Okay, Sergeant. I'll stop making the arrangements now.
Have you notified CPR officials yet?
Yes, sir. The mail clerk's calling them now from another phone.
Right. We'll see you as soon as you can make it. Goodbye. Baker.
Something happened, Sergeant?
It sure has. Train robbery outside of Marsh Neck. They got a safe full of gold dust. Look, I've got a hunch. Can you put your hands on that file on the gang that pulled the robbery last year at Stevenson?
Yeah, it should be in here somewhere. Well, that was the one where they held up the engineer and fireman and kept the engine away from the rest of the train.
Yeah, the stakes were gold that time, too. As I remember, there were three in the gang.
Some similarity to tonight's job?
Yeah, there might be. That bunch last year made a clean getaway. They got across the border.
Stevenson. Yeah, here it is.
I just put it down here, will you?
Yeah, sure. When did this happen?
Half an hour ago. Now, where's the description? Yeah, here. The robber was tall and described as swarthy, broad features, tattoo on right arm.
How come they got that piece of information?
He was captured in the States after another train robbery. The report on that is here somewhere. Captured by a local sheriff. Yeah, here it is. Sheriff Thompson had to camp all night with his prisoner, bound him with bail wire. Prisoner escaped during the night.
Then that sheriff's had a good look at him.
Yeah. So's the express messenger who got robbed tonight. If we got the two of them together, the descriptions might check. I'd better contact the old man. If they're heading for the border again, we've got to work fast.
All right, men. I've chosen the five of you because you've been stationed here longer than the rest, and you know this country. Sergeant Tarno will be in charge. Here are your instructions. Now, hold up the map, please, Constable Baker.
Sir?
Thank you. I've been in touch with the British Columbia police who are covering this area to the north and east along with Indian guides. We've sent several parties out to the western part of this province here. Now then, the vital gap is the country to the south between the Canadian Pacific Railway line and the United States border. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Therefore, Sergeant, you'll proceed with your party as quickly as possible to Bullen's Ranch at Crystal Lake. From there, establish a line of pickets with a view to blocking any attempt on the part of the bandits to cross the boundary into the United States. Take the shortest cutoff to Douglas Lake. And your horses are waiting. Good luck, men.
Whoa, hold still there, Beth.
She doesn't like the rain.
I don't blame her, getting hauled out of bed in the middle of a night like this.
You all set, Davies?
Yes, Sergeant.
Now, hold on to your mount steady now, man. We'll have to ride them hard to reach Steventown by morning, but that's my goal. We'll be glad of the rain. It'll keep them from getting too heated.
Hey, Sergeant.
Yes, Davies?
This turns out to be the same gang that got across the border last year, and we get them while we're rich men.
What do you mean, David?
Why, they pulled a string of robberies in the States, remember? There's a $20,000 reward offered down there for them.
Yeah, you're out of luck, Davies. We can't collect any reward. It's against rules and regulations. You know that. All right, men, we're away. I'll lead. If your horses get the tire, signal for a rest. Now, let's go.
In just a moment, we'll return for the second part of this true story of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the Queen's Men. And now we return you to the Queen's Men.
Well, Look down there, man. Our first resting place. Looks good, doesn't it?
Yeah, what ranch is that, Sergeant?
Marshall's. The commissioner notified him we'd be here about sunrise. They're going to feed and rest our horses. Not to mention resting us for a bit.
Well, I'm starving.
Now, look, now we're into this scrub country. We'll have to keep a sharp lookout. This is the kind of territory they're likely to hide out in, nice and flat. Looks harmless, but there are clumps of willows and large rock formations that offer pretty good shelter.
How long are we going to stop at the ranch, Sergeant?
Yeah, about 3 hours, I guess. Then we head for Crystal Lake. When we get there, we'll be met by another detachment. Corporal Ferguson, you return to Steventown. Maintain a patrol between these two places.
Yes, sir.
The rest of us will go on. Send another group back to patrol from Crystal Lake on. Now, we're not far north of the border, so if the bandits are proceeding on foot, they might be within 50 miles of here, or 50 feet. So let's all stay alert, tired or not.
Yeah, say, look, Sergeant, that ranch has smoke coming out of the chimney. Looks like they started cooking breakfast.
Yeah. Well, then what are we waiting for? Come on, let's go.
Get up.
Now, according to my map, this deserted village should be just around the next bend. There should be a clearing, and the first buildings in view on the slope.
How big a place is it, Sergeant?
Just a handful of old buildings left, the inspector said. No one's been near it for years except the odd refugee from the law.
Well, why doesn't anyone take steps to destroy it?
Baker, it's plain to see you're still a rookie.
Well, why?
You remember the bush killer who gave us all that trouble last year?
Yes.
Well, he was traced from one of these deserted clumps of buildings that are dotted over these western plains. They provide an excellent refuge. Very obvious to the Mounties, but the criminal mind isn't capable of seeing how obvious it is.
Now I get it. A place for us to start looking.
That's right. It's not often we find our man in one of them. We can usually establish if there's been recent occupancy and sometimes pick up valuable clues. Now, here's the bend.
And your map's right. That's the first building, Sergeant.
Wow. Pretty desolate picture, isn't it?
What causes people to desert a community like this?
Well, disease very often, or a big fire.
We going to walk the horses all the way? I mean, don't you think we should storm the place?
No, we don't want to scare them off. No, we're just a couple of prospectors ambling into unknown country. We'll just approach it nice and easy.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Davies.
Yes, Davis here. Is that you, Baker?
Yes. Look, the sergeant and I are putting up overnight in the town of Scarsville. He's head to call you.
Scarsville? Well, where in blazes is that?
Look, it's...
Hey, incidentally, you can break the news to him. We scouted every inch of the Crystal Lake area, questioned all the ranchers and storekeepers. There's no sign of him here.
Yeah, well, we think maybe we've got something.
Really?
You can locate Scarsville on your map. It's about 30 miles northeast of where you're located now. Now then... About 6 miles due north of the town in the hill country is a deserted village.
Yeah?
We've been over it once this afternoon, and it shows signs of having recently been camped in. Track marks of 3 horses. Now, the sergeant wants you to join us tomorrow. We'll be scouting the surrounding area.
But wait a minute, but how do I find it?
What kind of a question is that? You're a Mountie, Davis, and we're your men. Now come and get us.
Careful with your rifle, Baker. They got caught on a vine there. This underbrush is dangerous stuff.
Yeah, thick, too. Why, even if we came on the bandits, we wouldn't see them until we were face to face. And by that time, they could blow us up.
Well, we're not going to find them in here.
Yeah, then what are we doing in here, Sergeant, if you don't mind my asking?
We're just skirting back to that open stretch to the east of here. Probably nothing to that report of the 3 men seen camping, but still...
Was it one of our men saw them?
No, someone else told Corporal Shaver. Couldn't even say exactly where they were, but, well, we've tramped around for 3 days. We might as well give the area a good going over. Ouch!
What happened?
That's a twig. Just missed my eye. Now, I'll be glad when we get... Say, there's a clearing ahead.
Yeah, and our horses. Say, Sergeant, didn't we just leave 2 horses grazing there?
Yeah.
Well, do you see 3 there now?
Yeah. Yes, it's Davies. Well, how do you suppose he found us? Davies, over here.
Say, Sergeant, do you see it?
See what?
Over there, look. Smoke rising above the trees.
You don't think it's a forest fire?
Not much of a forest there. Sergeant, what's your guess?
Campfire. could be a campfire. Is that what you had in mind, Davies?
That's what I'm hoping, Sergeant. Kind of unusual to camp in this scrub area.
Well, there's no game around here. People usually camp for a reason.
Yeah, just what I was thinking. So, maybe it's Mercer.
Mercer?
Now, I guess I didn't tell you. The sheriff I spoke of, who arrested him in the States last year, got together with McNaught, the CPR messenger, and they decided the bandit was Mercer.
Wow. He's pulled a lot of big ones.
Yeah. Where are the rest of our men?
They're all back at the lake, Sergeant.
Well, then go back, round up a posse, and head back here, Baker.
Yes, Sergeant.
Look, I'll approach the smoke direct. You come along about halfway, then skirt the area, coming in from behind. If I find it's the three we're after, I'll engage them in conversation. But you stay hidden and keep us covered.
Okay, Sergeant.
And don't get that rifle caught in any more bushes.
Hey, hold it. Shut up, I hear something.
Howdy.
Morning.
Sorry to butt in, fellas. I thought I smelled coffee. Say, you have got coffee. I was right.
Yes, we have coffee.
Well, now, I don't want to intrude. I just thought maybe you might indulge a little bush hospitality.
You're a Mountie, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking for some men who held up a train.
Oh, are you? Not around this neck of the woods, I guess. We haven't seen a soul.
Been here long?
Well, quite a while. We're prospectors. Own a ranch near here.
Oh, where?
Not far from here. Go ahead, sit down. Have some coffee. Charlie, pour the man some coffee.
You mean pour him some coffee?
I mean pour him some coffee. You're getting the idea, Charlie.
Oh, that's mighty nice of you. How's the prospecting around these parts?
Well, not bad, not good.
Gold's popular stuff.
It's got its good points. Hey, these guys you're looking for, you got any leads?
A few.
Well, I hope you catch them.
Well, I guess we'll get them.
Well, what is it they say? The Mounties always get their man?
Yeah, that's what they say.
Hey.
What's the matter?
I heard something behind us. Some sound.
What did you hear?
From the bushes. I'm just going...
You better just stay where you are.
What?
You boys answer the description of the men I'm looking for. Throw them up.
Now, listen.
You're covered from behind as well, so do as I say. You can come out now, Baker.
Well, I nearly gave the show away.
What happened? You get your rifle caught again?
Oh, just stepped on a particularly loud twig. What do you think, Sergeant? Think these are our men?
Take a look yourself. They answer the descriptions.
Well, you're wrong, Mounty. You got the wrong guys.
Maybe.
Well, if you care to come along to our ranch, I can prove our identity. We're prospectors.
I don't think we'll take any tracks into the bush, thanks. We'll just sit right here and wait.
Wait for what?
A posse of our men will be along pretty soon, so if you're planning anything, you can forget it.
That coffee smells good.
Have a cup.
No thanks.
That's right, Baker. We'll just keep them covered. If they're who they say they are, they can prove it later.
Say, listen, Mounty, how about untying our hands, eh? How come all the rough stuff?
Nobody's being rough with you, men. And it's no hardship to have your hands tied. After what you tried to pull last night...
You can't blame a man for trying to escape, can you? Especially if he's been falsely arrested.
You men aren't very smart. If you were innocent, as you protest, there'd be no need for you to attempt escape. You're going to have a fair trial, you know.
Yeah, I could have ripped down that schoolhouse with my bare hands.
Exactly. And that's why your hands are tied. They're going to stay tied until you're turned over to the provincial jail.
Yeah, I hope it's more comfortable than the schoolhouse.
That's a grand place. You'll love it. Feather beds, all the comforts of home.
God, for
you. Better pull over to the side, Baker. Here comes another wagon. It's a pretty narrow section of road here.
You better stop, Sergeant?
No, you won't have to. The other fellow seems to be stopping.
Hey there!
Keep calling us.
Pull up a minute, will you?
Better stop, Blake. Be prepared to deal with some interference.
You think you're going to be?
Well, we can't tell.
Which one of you Mounties is in charge?
I am, sir. Sergeant Tarno. This is Constable Baker.
Oh, howdy, Sergeant. Constable. Wait. I'll get down. This is a coincidence, running into you men like this. Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Superintendent Blake of the Provincial Police.
Oh, how do you do?
Are these the men I've been hearing about that you captured yesterday?
Yep.
I hear you put them in the Black River schoolhouse overnight.
Yes, they gave us a bit of trouble, too.
Well, my suggestion, Sergeant, is that you turn your so-called prisoners over to me and go back and do some more looking. I think you've got the wrong men.
How do you figure that?
Oh, I heard from one of the ranchers that you've made a mistake. That you've got a Mr. Jameson, a local prospector. He caught a glimpse of your prisoners this morning and feels certain there's been a mistake.
And you're going on the opinion of this one rancher?
Why, well, I seem to have seen these men myself. I think they've been prospecting around here quite some time. Well, they don't look like bandits to me. Oh, I think you'd better turn them over. You may look downright foolish, Sergeant, if you go all the way back to headquarters with two innocent men.
Well, I'll take a chance on looking foolish, Superintendent. You see, I'm under instruction from my own commissioner and no one else.
Now, look, I represent the provincial police. We have jurisdiction in this province.
And no one is withholding these prisoners from you. They'll be resident in the provincial jail by this evening. I'll be glad to hand them over to you there. All right, Baker, let's go. Got them locked up, sir.
Good work, Sergeant. It's the Mercer gang, all right.
You know, that Mercer's a pretty smooth character. He almost had me wondering for a while if I'd made a mistake. Especially when that police superintendent was so sure that I had the wrong man.
Who was that, Sergeant?
Well, while we were escorting them back here, about 20 miles out of Stephentown, a man approached us on the road in a buggy. Said he was Superintendent Blake of the provincial police. Told me to turn my prisoners over to him and go back and look some more. He thought that I had the wrong man.
Funny thing for Blake to do.
Well, of course, I told him I wasn't taking orders from anyone but you, sir. Well, I must say he got in quite a temper about my refusal.
I've known Dalton Blake for 20 years. Never seen him lose his temper. Very controlled man. Say, what did this fellow look like?
Well, big, fat fellow.
Blake's as thin as a rail.
Chock-a-black hair.
And bald as a billiard ball.
Well, I'll be...
Sergeant... I think you nearly turned Mercer over to one of his own men.
Well, I didn't come anywhere near doing that, sir, but I wouldn't think of it. Well, I certainly didn't suspect it. Well, what do you know about that?
Mercer's last try, eh?
That's right, sir. Very clever of him, too. But he'll never make another one.
Yep. Train travel's gonna be a lot safer from now on.
That was the end of the Mercer gang, Davy.
Gee.
Yes, sir. Everybody was plenty happy to see those boys under wraps, especially the CPR.
What happened to them, Uncle Wally?
Oh, I found guilty, all three of them. Got a good long stretch, too.
Gee, that's a swell story. Did it all really happen, honest, exactly like that?
Well, now I'm only telling it the way I heard it and the way I remember it. I was just a young Mountie then, and I listened to the story with my eyes popping. Yeah, just like your car now, eh? But me, I had never captured anybody then, let alone tracking them down when they had the whole Western Prairie to roam around on, you know?
Well, what happened next, Uncle Wally?
What do you mean, next?
Well, what robbery happened next?
Why, I don't remember if there was another big robbery right in our area for quite a long time after that. And even if there had been, I wouldn't be telling you about it, youngster.
Oh, gee, why not?
Come on, I guess it's time for lunch. One story at a time is enough. There'll be lots more stories for me to tell you.
Gee, Uncle Wally, I wish I was old like you and used to be a Mountie. Then I'd know all the stories myself.
Yeah.
The Queen's Men, authentic stories of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. Music under the direction of Sidney Torch. Script and adaptation under the supervision of John Adaskin. Produced and directed by Harry Allen Tower. We'll be right back.
And as the RCMP march away to solve another case, that show had quite a number of episodes, by the way. I find it really interesting to note that the RCMP that you would have seen at that time period, and I'm assuming that that had to have been late 1800s, early 1900s, just based on the fact that they mentioned the gold rush, but mostly now that division of the RCMP is predominantly seen in shows like the Santa Claus Parade at Thanksgiving. Well, they usually have the Santa Claus Parade on our American Thanksgiving Day out of Toronto. But I hope you enjoyed that. I think it's a fun program, and we may listen to those as we delve into some more towers in 2018. We are now going to do something a little bit more traditionally British, but not BBC. Once again, this is from our friend Harry Towers, and this is the beginning of The Adventures of Horatio Hornblower. Now, this puts Horatio Hornblower as a captain. If any of you are familiar with the work of Horatio Hornblower, it is based on a C.S. Forrester group of novels. And it kind of motivated me to actually go back and look and see if I had any Hornblower dramas on in my hard drive from BBC. I actually do, from the novels by C.S. Forrester. Something fun to play on brunch one day. Today, we're going to look at Hornblower as a captain. So obviously the Napoleonic Wars are over. We go back to 1952 for this one. At least that's the date I have on it. And we listen to the very first ever Adventures of Horatio Hornblower and the Mad King.
Call all hands. Beat to quarters. Run out the guns. Stand by the starboard battery.
One broadside into it, if you please, Captain Bush.
Pointers on target. Linstocks ready.
Aye, aye, sir. Ready.
Fire!
Michael Redgrave as C.S. Forrester's indomitable man of the sea, Horatio Hornblower.
Severe restrictions I used to place on myself in those days. A constant determination to appear strong and taciturn to my officers and men. A fear of showing the slightest unbending lest it be construed as weakness. These things imposed on me the strain of eternal vigilance. Yet, even without these unnatural restraints, there was enough on my mind. Although I never discussed my problems with Lieutenant Bush, he was aware of them. Excited as everybody else appeared to be. Land after 7 months at sea. I desired passionately to rush on deck, but I must appear imperturbable and confident to my crew. So I forced myself to cross my knees and sip coffee with an air of unconcern. Mr. Gerard sent me to tell you land's in sight on the larboard bow.
Yeah. Well, tell Mr. Gerard I shall come on deck when I finish my breakfast.
Aye, aye, sir. Mr. Savage! Mr. Savage!
Sir! I forgot to close my door, Mr. Savage, and please don't make so much noise on the companionway.
Yes, sir. Very good, sir.
By the way, what does the land look like?
It looks like a burning mountain, sir. Two burning mountains. Volcano, sir.
The news almost brought me leaping from my chair. I called up a picture of the chart I had studied for so long in the privacy of my cabin. True, there were volcanoes all along this coast, and yet the entrance to the Gulf of Fonseca would undoubtedly be marked by two volcanoes. Was it possible that after 11 weeks out of sight of land and after quarreling with my navigating officer, whom I considered a fool, that I'd made a perfect landfall? I rose, and remembering just in time to saunter, went on deck.
What's all this? There's no one in this ship anything to do? Mr. Wood, I'll trouble you to send for the cooper and arrange for the filling of the water casks. Mr. Gerard, get the royals and stunsails off her.
All hands on deck!
I think I can see the smoke from the deck now, sir. Will you take my gloves?
I shall go to the fore topgallant masthead. Mr. Gerard, please send all hands to dinner.
Aye, aye, sir.
I'm going below. Send the reliable man with a good glass to the fore topgallant masthead.
Aye, aye, sir.
Dinner of fat salt pork in the tropics was not attractive, but I forced myself to eat before the gaze of my steward, who was watching my every movement with suppressed excitement. All wheel.
Sir?
Put out my best coat and put the new epaulettes on it. Clean breeches and best white stockings. Buckled shoes. See that the buckles shine. And the sword with the gold hilt.
Aye, aye, sir.
And please give Lieutenant Bush my compliments and desire him to step into my cabin. My desk the secret admiralty orders and unfolded them once more. I knew them by heart, but I studied them again until Bush arrived.
Come in. You wish to see me, sir?
Please be seated, Mr. Bush. We've now reached the stage of this voyage when it's advisable that you should know the main provisions of our enterprise. Should anything untoward occur to me, you would thus be able to act accordingly.
Very well, sir.
Well, the first part of the orders cover our voyage so far. They required the utmost secrecy so that no hint could reach our Spanish enemy of the approach of a British frigate to the Pacific shores of her possessions. I was therefore entirely prohibited from coming within sight of land until arriving at the Gulf of Fonseca.
Begging your pardon, sir, but I swear that order was penned by a landsman. It's not impossible.
The order's been carried out, Mr. Bush.
Well, only because you were in command, sir. If you'd let Crystal have his way last week, we'd have altered course and sailed slap into the Gulf of Panama and given the whole thing away.
We'll confine ourselves to fact, Mr. Bush. On arrival at the Gulf of Fonseca, I am requested and required to form an alliance with Don Julian Alvarado, who's a large landowner here.
Alliance, sir? With a Spaniard?
Don Julian intends, with our help, to rise in rebellion against the Spanish monarchy, and I carry arms and ammunition for him. I'm to do all in my power to ensure the success of his rebellion. I am, if necessary, to present him with one or more guns from the ship, and also I carry 50,000 guineas in gold, which I may disperse if I consider the rebellion would fail without it.
No wonder such secrecy was imposed, sir.
Exactly. Secrecy is still essential, but there are other orders into which I cannot go at the moment, but I may add that the Spaniards are believed to maintain in these waters a two-decked ship of 50 guns. It's named the Natividad.
and I am required to take, sink, burn, or destroy the Natividad at the first opportunity.
Take a two-decker with 50 guns? With a 36-gun frigate?
Battles have been fought and won against greater odds than that, Mr. Bush.
Oh, I know, sir, but Whitehall takes advantage of it now. If we should lose such a battle, no excuse will be accepted.
Sensible to take precautions, seeing that we were sailing straight into Spanish territory. The guns' crews cast off the frappings of the breeches, tugged their tackles to draw the guns inboard, rammed home the powder and shot, depressed the muzzles, and ran the guns out through the open ports.
Ship clear for action, sir. 10 minutes, 21 seconds.
Well, send a good man with the lead into the main chains and make ready to anchor. It was an open boat under two lateen sails and manned by half a dozen swarthy men. She hove to 50 yards away and a voice hailed in Spanish. Owing to my 2 years of imprisonment in Spain, I was fortunately familiar with the language.
Señor comandante, where the capitán, sí?
Sí, Captain Horatio Hornblower of His Britannic Majesty's frigate Lydia at your service. Whom have I the pleasure of welcoming?
Manuel Hernandez, Lieutenant General of El Supremo.
Name, El Supremo, puzzled me. As near as it could be rendered into English, it meant the Almighty. It is not to El Supremo that my orders are addressed.
Until lately, our Lord El Supremo was known to his men as His Excellency Don Julian Maria de Jesus de Alvarado y Montezuma.
I see. Well, it is Don Julian I wish to see.
El Supremo commands you to his presence.
Where is he?
Well, surely it is enough to know that El Supremo requires your attendance.
I would have you know, Senor, that a captain of one of His Britannic Majesty's ships is not at anyone's beck and call. But you can go if you like and tell Don Julian so. I spoke as though the interview was ended. But my haughty friend was obviously terrified at the prospect of returning to his El Supremo without me. Suddenly he explained that his lord's house lay on the side of the mountain. We must go through a small town, which was hidden from us by the curve of the land, and up the hill. I excuse myself for a moment.
Mr. Bush,
I'm going ashore. I hope to return soon. If I'm not back or have not communicated with you by midnight, you must take steps to ensure the safety of the ship. Here are my keys. At midnight, you will read the secret orders and act as you think proper.
Yes, sir. Do you think it is safe alone?
I don't know, but I must go. Mr. Bush, a matter of greater moment worries me. This Don Julian is a person of importance, and I represent our king. Look, I charge you to be frank, Mr. Bush, and give me your considered opinion on what I'm about to ask.
I will do so, sir.
Think gravely about it, Mr. Bush. These best white breeches and silk stockings, do you think they're sufficiently immaculate to do credit to His Majesty?
If I may say so, sir, your turnout could pass at His Majesty's court itself.
Thank you, Bush. Yeah, I pray you may be right.
And if there is any hanky-panky, sir, we'll bring you off if we have to move those volcanoes to do it.
You will see after the safety of the ship first. Señor Hernandez? I am at your service, sir. That journey to Don Julian's house remains a nightmare to this day. As we left the boat and walked up towards the collection of palm-roofed houses which constituted the town, we approached a poor wretch of a man who was bound to a 6-foot stake in the ground. The sun blazed on his bare head. His tongue was black and swollen.
Aqua! Aqua! Water, for the love of God, water!
What is this?
Calm, sir. It is only a man whom El Supremo has ordered to die. He is one of the unenlightened. He will die on the third day. They always do.
But what was this crime?
As I said, he He's one of the unenlightened. Behold, senor, the house of El Supremo.
I regarded my ruined stockings with dismay. The servants who surrounded us were dressed in the same mixture of finery and rags as Hernandez. One more splendid than the rest hurried towards us with a worried expression on his face.
El Supremo has been kept waiting. Please come quickly.
The door swung open to reveal a long room of glittering white. At its far end stood a treble dais, and in a canopied chair sat the man I had come half round the world to see. He didn't seem impressive, though Hernandez was cringing before him. A small, swarthy, fidgeting man with piercing black eyes and lank black hair. I suspected Indian blood mixed with his European ancestry. He wore a red coat laced with gold, a white stock, white breeches and stockings, gold buckles. I was mightily ashamed of my own soiled apparel.
You have been a long time, Hernandez. 11 men have been flogged in your absence.
Supremo, the Capitan came instantly on hearing your summons.
Captain Horatio Hornblower of His Britannic Majesty's frigate Lydia at your service. I fear that my appearance
You have brought arms and powder?
They're in my ship.
That is well. You will make arrangements with General Hernandez for landing them.
I thought of the Lydia's empty storerooms and the 380 men I had to feed. I can hand over nothing, sir, until my ship's needs are satisfied.
Capitan, you are addressing a Supremo.
I'm well aware of it. My water casks must be filled tomorrow. El Supremo's eyebrows lifted for a moment, but he too seemed to realize that a breach would be of no advantage. He waved a careless hand.
Make known your wants to Hernandez. He will see to it.
There is a spring close to where we landed.
Thank you. Besides water, I shall need 200 bullocks, 250 if they're small, and 500 pigs.
200 bullocks and 500 pigs?
200 fat bullocks. Also 100 quintals of salt, 40 tons of ship's bread, and if biscuit is unobtainable, I shall need the equivalent amount of flour, with ovens and fuel to bake it. The juice of 40,000 oranges, lemons, or limes, I can supply the casks. 10 tons of sugar, 5 tons of tobacco, a ton of coffee, and 20 tons of potatoes will suffice.
Captain, what you ask is impossible.
General, see that the captain's wants are satisfied.
But I
begin now.
Certainly, Supremo.
That is the only way to deal with such people.
Yeah.
They are no better than beasts. You doubtless saw criminals suffering punishment on your way here?
I did. Many.
Yes. They are incapable of understanding the simplest things. There are some who do not understand the obvious fact that my blood must be divine. They still cling to their old beliefs. My divinity, of course, is not a matter of opinion, but of fact. Your King George must have been delighted to hear that I had decided to act in concert with him.
He desired me to assure you of his friendship.
Of course. He would not presume further. The blood of his family cannot compare with that of an Alvarado. I find it satisfactory that you agree with me, Captain...
Hornblower.
Oh, thank you. We will now discuss the plans for the extension of my empire.
I felt I must agree with this madman, at least until my ship was revictualed, though my hopes of a successful rebellion under him receded. He droned interminably on, explaining his divine origins. More recently, he said he'd sent a note to the Captain General of Nicaragua demanding that individual's submission. The Captain General had hanged the messenger publicly and had sent men to take Don Julian.
Some of those men were killed on the road. Some died while attached to stakes, and a few were fortunate enough to see the light and are now in my army. The Captain General is now at the head of his army of 300 men in the city of El Salvador. With your weapons, I shall move on this town, which I shall burn. Together with the Captain General and any of his men who remain unenlightened. Perhaps you will accompany me. A burning town is worth seeing.
My ship must be revictualed first. Further, I must attain the whereabouts of a Spanish ship called the Natividad. She must not be permitted to take my ship while I'm engaged on land.
Then you had better capture her.
Yes.
I understand that she may be sailing into the bay at any moment.
What? Well, then I must get back to my ship at once. Substantial throne. Again the horses, the escort, the mountain road, the moaning prisoners, and those who would moan no more. But this time under a young moon which showed the Lydia swinging to her anchor in the bay far below. My boat was waiting when we reached the strand.
Heartily relieved to see you. Conversation with Don Julian, sir.
We had some conversation.
I have maintained all precautions on board against surprise, sir.
Very good, Mr. Bush. I'm going below. Call me if there's anything to justify it.
Aye, aye, sir. Pardon me, sir. I wondered, well, hope your dress proved suitable to the occasion, sir.
I looked down at my white breeches, soiled and stained by the dirty saddle.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Bush. My dress was well enough.
Horatio Hornblower, starring Michael Redgrave, is based on the novels by C.S. Forrester. Music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
And that, my friends, is Harry Allen Towers' idea of a serial. The date on that is July the 7th of 1952, and that is the first episode of Horatio Hornblower, the title, Dealing with a Mad King. It's very interesting when you listen to Michael Redgrave in this, because up until this week when I was researching this, I had basically known Michael Redgrave, you know, obviously through Vanessa and Lynn, but also as a very, very, very well-known Shakespearean actor. And when you hear him as Hornblower, he sounds quite the debonair captain with a little bit of Hamlet thrown in for good measure. If you ever listen to the Hornblower from the BBC, he sounds much more the sailor. Of course, you never know. If you read the books, well, this isn't much of a spoiler, but you watch Hornblower's rise through the ranks from midshipman on up to captain And, well, it's interesting to see just how far he goes. I highly recommend the books if you've never read them. They're very good. And, I think you can find them on iBooks or Bookshare or, and definitely on Brunch with the Brits here pretty soon. Anyhow, that is going to do it for me this week. Certainly want to thank you all for joining us for Michael's Saturday Surprise. Join me again in 3 months when we may revisit this, but I can promise you that next week you'll have a completely different host with completely different surprises. I'm about ready to re-release The Room to you, but before I do, I want to say thank you guys so much for listening, and from Garden Grove, California, it's been a pleasure to be your host. I want to thank Michael Amaro. If you have any requests for the show, by the way, it is mikemelly@earthlink.net, so you could actually email him and tell him you don't want any more Horatio Hornblower. That'd be okay. But seriously, thanks so much for listening, and have a good evening.